Christy King. We are here for another Fan Reach podcast, and I'm here with the usual guys, Brian and Kenyon, and of course we're going to have Dan Hannigan Daly back again to talk a good bit about sports gambling. And I wanted to start out with getting your guys' take on the effect of data and sports gambling and journalism, sports journalism, because I've read something very recently that went pretty in-depth about both the opportunities and some of the pitfalls or consequences of having so much data in the hands of sports journalists when they know that information and what they can do with it. This article made a pretty strong comparison between traders on Wall Street when they know data, what they call insider trading, and what the companies that they work for will or will not allow those traders to do with the information. I'm thinking with the changes that are taking place with media, and now that gambling is becoming more legal in more places across the United States, we're going to be exploring some of the issues that probably Europe has been dealing with for a while. So Dan, you know, you're why don't you introduce yourself and what company you're with, and maybe give me some kind of instant feedback on what you're thinking about that kind of thing.
Well, thanks for having me on. Again, Dan Hannigan Daly, I'm CEO of Sports Info Solutions. We are a sports data company that goes really, really deep with respect to football, baseball, and basketball. We currently service predominantly professional sports teams, help them make better decisions on the field of play or in the front office, but also are now working quite closely with odds providers and sports books and eventually sports fans as well to help them make better decisions as pertains to, you know, wagering and the probabilities of events occurring on the field of play. I think it's a really interesting question as far as, you know, where do journalists fall in sort of the line of fire with respect to access to information. I'm sure the gents on the phone here have some experience with respect to you know, athletes or members of individual teams or anyone associated with a league, like not being able to partake in any of the activities, fantasy, betting, or otherwise, that are associated with the leagues that they're a part of. You know, certainly that is the case for anyone up the food chain in those groups. Obviously, like, journalists sort of fall in this interesting area where they're not officially working for a team or for a league or for an organization specifically, but are in the trenches, so to speak, and getting really useful information that would help inform betting lines quite a bit. And, you know, certainly for us, in the way that we create data for some of the lower levels, like college baseball, college football, college basketball, I mean, we have incredible information that, you know, bookmaker A, B, or C in Nevada would not have access to without, you know, acquiring our services. Obviously, we're not using it for the purposes of wagering necessarily, but it wouldn't be a stretch to see a journalist go and take that information and place wagers. So it's definitely a fine line there as far as, like, what is your responsibility? I'm not a journalism major or anything myself. I don't know necessarily, like, what you should or shouldn't do or what's in the code as far as journalism goes, but there's some level of responsibility, I assume, there to report on things and not necessarily take advantage, but it's definitely a really interesting area.
We have a journalist right now sitting in front of us, so why don't we ask Brian Jones?
No. I'm a college football analyst.
I'm sorry. There's a difference between journalists and analysts?
There's a very tangential connection.
Okay? Oh, okay. I want to make sure.
Yeah, but the evolution on a couple of fronts in this area is really stunning to me, because, you know, one, with fantasy and how it's grown and evolved, and Kenya and I were there when it was mainly mom and pops at this huge convention in Vegas back in early 2000. I mean, just your everyday folks were there. And now you have these huge entities, of which Dan was formerly part of one. And now he's that spun off into where he is now with these analytical companies. And on the other front, from a player standpoint, data and metrics have always been there. Your 40 time, your bench press, how much do you squat? Those were the main barometers of where we place guys and how we basically determine who we should probably hitch our wagon to, who we should draft, things of that nature. Now, with the Dan and his company and others out there, they drill it even deeper. You know, they're able to distill all this information and have refined a technique. It, while it's still not foolproof, the drafting system, they have a lot more information they can sift through that helps them more make a more, you know, not educational, I guess, if you will. But as far as the journalists are concerned, I think when we get to the point where journalists are saying, well, the metric said he should have come out of that break, you know, differently than he ideally did, we're in a world of hurt. I think we're going to be in trouble there. Now, it all goes back to, you know, Christy, what you, Kenya, and I have discussed, who actually owns that data? If the journalists have that info and the player doesn't and the coaches have it, one, who gave it to the journalists? How'd they get access? And two, why, as a player, am I not aware that they have my information?
BJ, what was your 40 time at the combine?
Slow. Didn't take it
exactly.
Seriously.
Same here. And yeah, the last thing I wanted, because I can go online now and everybody can see my slow 40 time.
Right.
That is data. That is data that's been used like that forever. And journalists have been taking advantage of that because it's a reporting tool that is part of what they do for a living, is to drill down and find insights that the public can't find. And that's why we access journals. That's why we want to hear from them. And the deeper data sets that they get, I think, are now being interpreted in a certain way, but it goes back to the same question. What is public data? You know, what data should be published, and should I have, as an athlete, a right to say how that data is actually used? Because, like I said, I don't enjoy going on seeing that slow 40 time 30 years later, understanding all the money I lost running that slow 40 time. So I can only imagine a guy coming out of, you know, getting data around his break or his fumbling against certain teams and things like that, that really we have talked about for years, just outsourced on this higher level. But now we can drill down. And I think journalists are gonna play a key role. Now, I think it may strain some relationships from within the organizations, and especially with the athletes, which are a cool sense of where they get information and obviously want to report on. But I think we really need to start segmenting what is public data off of these players and what is actually private. And I think we'll get to that at a certain point, but we're definitely not there right now.
So Dan, I'm gonna put you on the spot. A journalist comes to you and say, hey, we want access, we want to buy your solution and have access to all this information. How do you handle that, knowing, you know, this should be proprietary and only visible to your sports clients, but the journalist has a deep pocket and they want insights.
Well, or any customer that approaches you,
yeah,
right?
Because
there's starting to be new games and new ways to use data for a million different purposes. So I'm sure, Dan, you guys have to kind of, as an executive team.
We certainly see that a little bit. And it does actually depend on which of our data products that someone is coming to look for. So like our basketball, our sort of main basketball product is a hoop scouting lab, which essentially we're capturing all data points for 100 or so prospects and aggregating all of that and putting it into data sets and a lab that allows NBA teams to go and figure out who they want to draft based on whatever sort of metrics that they so value. That type of content that we create for that would be incredibly valuable for a professional sports bettor who's betting on who's going to get picked within the NBA draft. And obviously we have access to lots of information because we're interacting with teams who are asking about specific athletes and sort of showing that they have an interest in player A, B, or C. Obviously we're not in a position to share any of that. And even if we wanted to grow our brand on social media and whatever else, it's simply not an option in that scenario.
But,
for other
but
types
why
of
people, isn't it an option though? I mean, because really you guys could profit from that. If there's a bunch of people interested in a proprietary thing, So, like, what is the thought process that you guys go through? What are the lines that you don't cross and why?
I mean, for that specifically, that would effectively invalidate all of the trust that we've built up with those teams who are buying that data. Because why would team A buy the data and team B not buy the data when it's available publicly through some other avenue or someone else is able to access it? So, you know, in that scenario, there's a very specific reason behind it. Other data sets that we have, and one that's actually really interesting both for teams and for sports books, is we're cataloging every single time a player took a hit somewhere on their body, and you know, have some models with machine learning to determine what is the probability of athlete A, B, or C getting injured this week, next week, rest of the year, etc. That type of information, super valuable for the purposes of wagering, certainly valuable for on the field of play. You know, in that scenario, we make that accessible because of the way that we're actually capturing that data and distributing it. Like, we don't have chips on these athletes or anything like that.
Now, does that border along the lines of HIPAA? Because that's health information. He got injured here. What is the probability of him?
That is a very good question. I don't believe it would, because of how we're capturing the data simply off of a video. Like, we don't have any of the actual medical information about these athletes. We're simply making assumptions based on what we are seeing.
Gotcha.
There. But certainly, like, if we were, you know, one of the partners of a team and actually collecting, you know, biomechanical data off of an athlete, like, no way would you, at least for now, I maybe in the future this is a thing that would arise, but currently no way would that be applicable for the purposes of sports wagering or for public consumption.
Well, there's another kind of aspect to this whole deep dive into data, sports data, player data, and all that was kind of interesting to me, was to think back, of course, to which is for me at 53, the most famous gambling data issue was Pete Rose, right? You're a player, you're on a team, and you're gambling on your sport. Well, you know, you could make some Wall Street comparisons. If I'm an expert in the media industry and I buy stock about my industry, I'm making bets on companies where I know something. I understand some, probably more than the average person, what those companies are worth, the data and analytics that I have personally done on those companies make me a little bit of an insider, right? Yeah. Well, so you have players who know themselves, but they also understand what they're looking at with other athletes in a way that maybe mere mortals don't necessarily understand. And then, of course, you have companies that specifically look at data all the time and are experts in data analytics and drawing conclusions from those pieces of data. Well, all of a sudden it gets really interesting to think through who has access to this data, and now in gambling sense, when do they have access to that data?
Oh, yeah.
So I'm assuming, Dan, you and your company, you guys have access to data really early on. You understand, especially with the teams that you have partnerships with, exactly what they're looking for and what to do with it. None of that probably anybody necessarily wants to share with a journalist. But then I've learned recently that companies that do, that are sports books, sign integrity agreements with the people that they do business with to make sure there are rules and policies around the time in which they get data and information. So I'm sort of curious, that's not really a question, it's just sort of an observation, but I'm curious how your company in that context looks at every new piece of data. I'm sure you're getting new stuff all the time. You have super smart people in analytics saying, ooh, if we measured this one new thing about players, we could have this game, or it could be used in this way. So how do you guys look at data and the time, you know, decide when it can be shared? You know, what are some of the, I guess I'll call them case studies. Like, there's probably more than one decision that you're making at any given time, what to do with this data and when you can share it.
Yeah, I mean, typically we would handle these types of scenarios more on a case-by-case basis than not. Like, historically speaking anyways, our first and foremost sort of operation is focused on improving the teams that we work with. not necessarily creating loads and loads of data that helps us as a as an organization place bets, because that's simply not what we're doing. Is that within the realm of possibility? I mean, potentially, but probably not. I don't think that's necessarily something that we want to explore a huge amount. And there would be some restrictions around that as well. Like the way that we are collecting data is generally speaking enabled by the partnerships that we have with the team. So we get access to video feeds and like the All 22 and the High Home for baseball, things that we would otherwise not have access to. So that does preclude us from using that data for some set of potential use cases anyways. I think an interesting sort of tidbit to share, just kind of throwing it out there in general, is like, you know, at a company like DraftKings, and it'd be the same for any of the operators, like there are restrictions in place for you as an employee, what you can and can't do. Obviously, you can't place bets on your own platform. If you're using a third-party provider, can be, or someone similar to that, then you can't place bets on any other platform that uses that same trading software and information, because you, in essence, are an insider in that scenario. However, if you are on the trading team, so someone who's setting the lines for NFL, nothing stops you from going and placing bets on any other site that's out there, if you so desire. And like typically, that's an activity that happens quite a bit, to the point where some traders are actually underpaid because they're in a position where they're getting all this great information. They can go and actually make money on other websites. At least historically, that was certainly the case. So it is quite interesting in that there's a little bit of the Wild West. I mean, things are moving quite quickly, obviously, in the U.S. I mean, Arizona launched today, and I think they only like enacted legislation like 5 months ago. Like it moved incredibly quickly. So there are going to be scenarios where things don't necessarily play out in the utmost sort of appropriate fashion, but it kind of is what it is. Like right now, there's access to information that's broad, and you know, kind of using your example, like you work in marketing, you can trade marketing stocks. Like nothing necessarily stopping you from that. You can't do anything untoward with respect to your own organization, but within that general realm, like using information to sort of better yourself is like a pretty common thing that occurs, I suppose, if you want to go really meta.
Dan, you mentioned this new category, the injury category, if you will. What other new frontiers are y'all focusing on or have realized? And additionally, along the lines of this discussion about data now creeping into the journalist world, do you see it bleeding into any other areas that before now, you would have never thought that we'd be talking about data in that particular vein?
Yeah, so starting on the first question, I mean, a lot of our focus right now, as far as sort of innovative data points, is on our MBA operations. So we're expanding into a full MBA data collection and effectively quantifying the previously unquantifiable. We have sort of a history of doing that, starting with baseball, where 20 years ago, there were no defensive metrics, and we sort of created all of those. We're doing something very similar on the NBA front, where we're
effectively— Well, let me stop you there, because they don't play defense in the NBA anymore. So yeah. You don't have to, you're wasting your time on that metric.
Well, the data would say otherwise. Certainly there are some who have consistently negative expected points on every single play. But we're basically, for every single play that occurs on the court, for all five players on either side, giving them a plus or minus rating as far as how they impacted the likelihood of their team winning that game. So quantifying winning impact along with all sorts of other metrics associated with that. So we're doing a lot there, which is certainly pretty exciting. We've done a lot on the football side as well. Like we have similar metrics to identify, like on any given play, what the expected total points accrued by that athlete on that team, or if he was replaced, like a wins above replacement type experience. So doing a lot there. Your second question, mind repeating that one?
What other areas do you see these data points, data sets creeping into? We're discussing journalism and how now, that's a new frontier. Are there other areas on the horizon where this may be at play?
I mean, I think that the data that we create, and sort of broadly sports data is just going to continue to become more and more mainstream for for the general fan. I mean, you're already seeing it now. If you've watched like any of the World Cup qualifying soccer, I'm a big soccer fan. Like, they're showing expected goals and things like that on the broadcast, which was definitely never a thing. You know, I'm sure the NFL will have loads with respect to their next gen stats. Like, that's just going to continue to sort of proliferate as a set of mainstream data points that are coming out that people are just willing to consume, because that set of data helps inform wagering and fantasy in a much better way than your sort of traditional box score. It's like more about the process, less about the result. And I think obviously I'm biased coming from the world that I'm in, but I think there's more sort of proclivity towards that that is certainly occurring.
Well, you guys have taken it to a whole nother level, man. As someone who has to study, you know, tendencies and players and plays and things of that nature and situations, you know, this go with your gut or go with the metrics and what the analytics say. You have that interesting dynamic that coaches are wrestling with. And we analysts, we could sit there all day and just be inundated with the amount of information that you're able to extract nowadays. It's amazing what you guys do at SIS and others, man. I'm just like, wow, it's just a wealth of information.
It is a lot. I mean, obviously it's a really exciting time of year for us. We just had another 40 video scouts join the group, and they're all like players or coaches and like subject matter experts in football to collect the data. And like, one NFL game takes us 40 hours to do. Like, we are hyper attentive to detail, capturing every single thing you possibly could imagine, and making sure that it's accurate, and then like performing some analysis on top of that and then distributing it. But certainly one of the things that we're keen to do in the next little while, and certainly sort of goes hand in hand with what I mentioned earlier around sort of the general adoption of data, is like lower the barrier to entry for sort of Joe Blow to go and actually understand the information that we are creating. Like, doing it less, I don't want to say doing it less analytically sort of informed, but sort of bridging that gap and communicating the value of the data that we have is a pretty big thing. You kind of see it in the sports that we offer. Baseball is all the way there. I mean, you can manage a baseball team and never even actually look at the team, just look at the numbers and sort of sort it all out. And that's been kind of going on that path for a while. Football and basketball, a little bit less so. There's a bit of push and pull there, and certainly the same can be said on the consumer side. So a lot to do there, certainly, but we're pretty exciting with some of the marketing initiatives and whatnot that we have.
Expound on that because are you getting too technical? Are you losing some fans? Because I need to have an IT education to understand some of this.
At times for sure. And I think like that's where the sort of the packaging of the data and the way that you present the information is important, and also how you frame it. And I think this goes for those in the front offices or decision makers for professional teams as well. It's like, this isn't the end all and be all. This is just more information to help guide your decision-making process. Certainly, you know, the eye test has value if you've been doing that for a really long time and have a great history of success in understanding, you know, player A, B, or C and some of their tendencies that maybe we're not capturing because of whatever reason. It's not too dissimilar to one of our sort of value props relative to others in the space, is we do have people physically watching the games and capturing the data, whereas other data analytics groups might just have computer vision trying to capture the data. And like, there's stuff that gets missed in that scenario. Like, a good example would be, you know, I'm on the basketball court and I'm standing, you know, 2 feet away from you. You can see using computer vision, like where I am relative to the person who's shooting, like 2 feet away. But if you replace me with Kevin Garnett and both of our arms are up, like, it's pretty big difference. Yeah. I'm not a very tall guy.
Difference.
Pretty big difference as far as like the difficulty of that shot, me versus them. But like in a lot of cases right now, with just sheer computer vision, like, you don't have that next level of computer. So you're not capturing that data accordingly. Yeah. So we're actually capturing, like, where is the hand relative to the athlete who's taking the shot? Like, that sort of stuff I think it's just really, really impactful.
Well, and the more that computer analytics of statistics gets as nuanced as a human observer, that means those observations can be done faster. And that's going to make a big difference on gambling. That's going to make that information more relevant. In some ways, in my head, it reminds me of, you know, in the early 2000s when people in Wall Street started to put black fiber between certain exchange points on Wall Street to their houses or to their businesses. They got fractions of a second faster information about Wall Street and about bets than the guy next door. And for a while, there was a pocket there where they made a lot more money because they could process that information and place bets faster with the help of technology. So you mentioned earlier that this place of sports information and betting is very much kind of the Wild West because of technology. It's not that people haven't been making up games and betting on the most random things since forever, whether it was legal or not. But there is kind of this, now that it is legal, sports books have a really hard job, not just a gambler, but sports books have the incredibly difficult job of figuring out what data is interesting, what is a game, what is something to bet on, and how do we get information about that thing in order to create odds, or how to even turn that into something. So your company might not, but I'm assuming sports books must be getting this information from someone like your company, right? In order to
So there's a set of data providers, ourselves included, that will collect, you know, sort of your basic live data and distribute that directly to sports books that would then power a model that then has live betting odds. One of the interesting things that you mentioned there, just around like access to information at a really low latency, using that Wall Street example, like that definitely happens in sports betting. I mean, those types of bettors are known as courtsiders, because historically they would have been courtside at a tennis match, and that's their access to a faster data feed by virtue of like physically being there.
Right.
And so a lot of sports books will do loads of different things to mitigate against that potential risk. There's bet delays that are placed on any bet that gets put down. Might be 5 seconds, might be 7 seconds, might be 2 seconds. Depends on the confidence in the latency of the data. And then anyone that's constantly sort of beating the book, they'll get marked accordingly, and the books will keep a close eye on those individuals, typically speaking. Like you'll know when someone lives close to that stadium, because they're just like, how do they know every single pitch? This doesn't make any sense. Like the probability of them being correct on every single pitch is just insane. Yet they figured it out. So.
Dan, last one for me, man. You know, athletes are conditioned to push through the pain, push through the fatigue. Are there, the data is saying, okay, at a certain point, he's not running as, or she's not running as fast as they ordinarily should. And the coach sees that data and says, okay, well, you come sit, I'll put a fresh body in there. But that athlete is your best athlete. And even though they're fatigued or they're dealing with, they're hurt, let's say they're hurt, they still give you the best opportunity to win, even though they're not 100%. Are there algorithms that reflect that, even though, hey, the metrics are below where we would ideally want them to be, he or she's still gonna give me the best opportunity to pull out a victory?
I mean, definitely, yeah, like that. And that's a really difficult sort of thing to measure properly, is like, what is your impact? What is your likely impact on the probability of your team winning or losing? And how does that impact get changed by virtue of your prospective injury or being injured or hurt, and the propensity of you to get injured further, which would then impact sort of future weeks? And the decision-making there is incredibly intricate. A lot of it depends on what is the sort of time horizon that you believe to be optimal. Is it, we must win this game? Is it, we must have this player healthy for the next 5 weeks because we have four additional incredibly important games? Is it is the rest of the year? Is this a young player? They have $30 million contract or whatever it is, need to sort of maintain them throughout that. So it's an incredibly fine balance that you need to sort of have in order to make appropriate decisions in that type of scenario. But like, certainly we're sort of modeling everything out and providing you with the information. It's like, for this game, it's probably optimal to take this player out or keep them in. Or, you know, for this time horizon, you might actually want to opt on having them out, because winning this game, you know, for the potential of you winning the entire championship or making the playoffs or whatever it is that goal is that you've sort of set as your barometer, you know, maybe it's actually more important for you to keep them healthy for next week and the next week, because something could happen. The numbers say that it might.
Do you guys kind of look at some of these changes and what's happening and how journalists are covering sports and what is clearly popular for them and try to mimic some of that? Or, you know, is that cart before the horse or?
Yeah, I mean, I think the way that we're approaching it is certainly, we understand that the more, the further sports betting proliferates, the further sort of sports engagement will go. And like at DraftKings, we saw it all the time because we were kind of ahead of the curve with DFS and offering it on sports that were like popular, but not massive, like the PGA Tour, UFC kind of jumped to mind, where we were able to capture an audience for those that weren't historically fans of those sports, but we created really compelling games where you could literally win $1 million for any major golf tournament that was going on. And you might imagine that a lot of people would tune into that golf tournament that maybe don't love golf all of that much from a viewing perspective. Anyways, same for UFC, same for NASCAR. Saw it quite a bit. Even when we launched the CFL, I mean, the numbers of people tuning into ESPN2 to watch the Canadian Football League was astronomical. It was like a 400% growth, because we had this captive audience of people who love fantasy and getting skin in the game. And they're like, oh, I also like football. Cool, there's this other football. Might as well like get involved in that. And so it was really interesting to see a lot of that. Anyways, with respect to sort of what we're doing at SIS, you know, we have this unique vantage point in that, yes, we have loads of information that's very, very valuable, that literally helping teams make million-dollar decisions every single day. We believe that some aspect of that data is valuable to sports fans who want to be more informed when they're actually placing wagers. And what I always found very interesting, and it kind of goes into the question around like journalists and their association with sports books, and like, you know, ultimately sports books want people to, I guess the perception is sports books want people to lose money because that's how they win. Like, right, you lose bet, I win money. That's sort of the relationship here. And so it was always really difficult for a place like DraftKings, where we actually more valued engagement, less so just like taking your money. Like, we just wanted repeat business. We wanted to make sports better and grow the overall pie. So we'd offer a lot of sort of data products and tips and tools and things that would allow you to feel better about your bets. And constantly the perception was like, I feel like you want me to lose. You're probably going to give me bad data, when obviously we weren't doing any of that, but that's sort of the perception. Now you're seeing more and more of these you know, journalistic groups getting involved in sports betting, and now ESPN's looking to license their brand for $3 billion to the highest bidder for sports betting. Like, it's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out, because, you know, certainly people will want information to help make bets, but it has to be done in sort of the utmost confidence that, like, this is real information that I'm using. Like, you're not getting me here by providing me with some trend that I have no way of validating, whether, you know, in the last 17 NFL season openers, when the road team is a 9-point underdog and their quarterback, you know, missed 3 games in the prior season, that they're likely to cover. Like, I can't validate. I mean, that'd be really hard to validate as a general individual. So, yeah, you know, a happy medium of that is sort of the third party like ourselves who's able to provide that data in a slightly different light, or partnering with the leagues or the teams that should have your sort of best interests at heart, I would imagine.
SIS is our trust partner.
There you go. Exactly. We're trusted. We value accuracy and obviously being trusted, and you know, work with teams quite closely to ensure that.
You were talking about how there's a trust factor for people getting sports information. You know, if you're gonna lay a bet on something, you know, you got to have the hot tip, right? So that means you trust where that hot tip is coming from, right? So what's interesting is what I was thinking through again about reading about the massive changes that are coming to sports journalism, and not coming, but are already happening in sports journalism, is that trust. So then I was thinking, well, if you're a sports journalist and you're upfront about the fact that you do gamble, and in fact, I made X amount of dollars on this bet on the NFL yesterday and this bet on the baseball and this on soccer, and then you have someone who also is betting, but they don't say anything because they think it's a little bit of a conflict of interest as a journalist, I'm sitting here thinking, I wonder what most people would think is the right thing to do, which is really three choices. You don't bet at all because you're reporting on it. Well, but then do I trust you because maybe you're not as good at this, you know, because you're not gambling and winning. That's interesting to think about, because I know some of these guys are really upfront about it and some of them are not.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly lean in the camp of just generally being more transparent than not. And, you know, certainly there are different platforms that are out there that, and some are, I'm sure there'll be new ones being created right now that sort of create that, almost like Rolodex of individuals who are wagering, and you can actually go and see what bets this person A, B, or C has placed. Maybe not necessarily the actual financials associated with it, but like that they actually did indeed place the bet that they said they placed. Because like right now, there's really no way to validate at all whether, you know, Scott Van Pelt or some other industry, you know, leader is actually placing bets that they're saying they're placing. And, you know, obviously every single person that claims, not every single, but the vast majority of people that are claiming that they're incredible sports bettors are like, yeah, I'm like 70%. Like, I can tell you the numbers are not that. And certainly, you know, the sort of true professional bettors, like, they're eking out 55, 56, maybe even a little bit lower, just trying to get an edge anywhere possible. I mean, the likelihood of being so incredibly successful, as you see some of the folks that are out there who are called touts, like straight up selling the picks, some of it's just literally just taking advantage of people who are uninformed, which is obviously quite unfortunate. So
given the fact that now that there's tons of extra data, and more importantly, some analytics that give context to that data, I'm kind of surprised that professional gamblers still don't do marginally better than 50%. Why do you think that is?
I mean, a couple of different reasons. One is it's really, really hard. Obviously, like you're grinding a lot. You might not necessarily have access to the same amount of resources that others do. I think that some of that can and probably should change in the U.S., just as the whole market dynamic here is quite different relative to other parts of the world, where it's totally land grab mode. Like every single sports book out there right now wants to take as much action as possible. I mean, certainly there are folks that have gotten cut off on certain types of betting markets and whatnot, but like typically there's more leniency towards, you know, taking what's quote unquote sharp action than there would have historically been in places like the UK and otherwise. Because like a lot of the times you would get cut off on places where you actually have a really significant edge, or like the limits would just be really, really low, that, you know, you're kind of only eking out small wins here and there. So like specifically on all the player props and whatnot that are out there, especially in the US, I mean, you can bet on every single thing for players, but the limits are quite low because the books don't have huge confidence necessarily that what they're putting out there is even accurate. They're just like, we have to offer strikeouts for every game or this thing for every game because, you know, that's what our customers demand, but they don't necessarily have the appetite to take all of the wagering on it, at least historically. But I think that's starting to change. I'm no professional bettor myself, obviously. I don't totally know, but that sort of seems to be a general sentiment that I've noticed out there.
I wanted to ask you specifically about, you know, now that you've been at SIS a little bit longer, and you know, I'm starting to see with some of the work that I'm doing a whole lot more focus on the mobile space, especially for gambling. I mean, obviously there's these huge changes in sports journalism, which we've been talking about most of this time, but also because of mobile and the legalization of mobile betting, because I didn't realize not every state legalized mobile access. Some states legalized parts of gambling, but not a free-for-all everywhere, whereas some states said, yeah, you can do this on mobile devices as well. So it's interesting to me just recently to watch the states that have legalized mobile betting, what some of the evolution of that is. Do you guys have a sense of what's happening in the mobile space and where that's going?
Yeah, I mean, like certainly at DraftKings, we were mobile first all of the time. And even in the online space, like 90% of bets would be on a mobile device, maybe 10% on a laptop or on the desktop. Even a tiny little sliver would be at a retail sportsbook, just because it is a little bit more difficult. It's a little more intimidating. You feel rushed, there's people behind you, all of those things. With SIS, certainly, you know, our intention is to provide better information to those people who are, you know, messing around on their phone looking to place bets, by providing them with tools and insights. And, you know, that can either be through ourselves or through some of our partners that have brands that are out there who are taking our data and packaging it up in such a way. And there's certainly an interesting movement in a few, we'll call them startups that are coming out there now that are really, really leaning into on the mobile first, sort of lowering that barrier to entry, making it less intimidating, helping with education, the social aspects of sports betting, all of these things that kind of gotten left behind, at least initially, as the sort of the phase one of sports betting has rolled out in the US. It's really been focused on states opening up, land grab mode, commoditized products, a lot of convergence of technologies and brands and whatnot. I think we'll pretty soon sort of get into that next phase of like evolutionary products that are coming out that sort of meet the customer demand that's now starting to evolve, where, you know, there's specific key pain points. Like live betting is a pain point currently for US sports. Like the number of bets rejected is just way too high. And as a fan, you're like, I don't understand it. Why am I, I'm trying to place $10 on, you know, Joe Burrow to throw the first touchdown here. Like, why can't I just get that bet on? And so it's obviously very frustrating. So we're working diligently to solve stuff like that. And everything we're doing is focusing on improving information and improving sort of the latency associated with that information to help sort of all areas of sports betting and also the teams as well.
Last question, and I'll put you on the spot a little bit here. What is coming to gambling, or what I should say, what is coming to sports data? And I don't care if it has to do with gambling or whatever, just anything in sports. What is it that you guys are working on that you're allowed to talk about that's really interesting to you? What is the development? Actually, it could be in your company or just in sports information in general. What's coming that's really interesting to you? What's really different that's coming down the pike you're excited about?
I think what is most exciting about sort of the space in general and also what we're doing is just the rapid advancements in technology, which is improving the sheer number of data points and also the quality and accuracy of those data points, and then the distribution of those data points in a faster manner. I think that to me is incredibly exciting. That's where we're investing pretty much all of our resources into building technologies and operations that enable for the transmission of data in a faster way that solves current customer problems that are out there, whether it's I can't place this bet because there's too much latency, whether it's, you know, I don't have enough information to make a decision as far as like what we should do on this play or this play if I'm a coach or whatever, or I don't know what to do as it pertains to, should I place this live bet? Yes or no? Like, are the odds that I'm seeing actually off? So we'll, you know, create algorithms to determine the probability of that bet winning or not. Like, I think that's where it's certainly really exciting. And we haven't done a huge amount there necessarily, but like, the tracking data and having like the biomechanics and whatnot is interesting. TBD exactly what we do in that arena. But to me, that's another area of sort of broad sports technology that is really fascinating. I mean, I love having all of my metrics. Like I use like an 8 sleep, and so I have like my sleep health and all these things. I'm like, this is incredible. to see like what my heart rate was when I slept and you know, how long it took me to go to sleep, toss and turns, all these things. Similarly with all the Whoop data, like I think that's just compelling for like the average person's health.
All right. Well, thank you again for letting us bug you again so quickly after the last one. But people really, really liked the last conversation we had. And so people were asking questions and wanting to hear more. So thank you for joining us again.
Happy to come on anytime. You let me know.
All right. Awesome. Thanks, Dan. And we'll talk to you soon. Have a good weekend.